After he has sat down, if his teacher or preceptor arrives while the meal is still unfinished, so he sat down on a seat, and then say he is eating. Then if a teacher or preceptor arrives or comes in, it is allowable for him to get up and do the duty. Actually, it is not only allowable, he should or he must get up and do the duties, because we have duties to the to our teachers, to our preceptors. So if we are sitting and a preceptor or a teacher comes in, we must stand up and greet him, and then do whatever we can for his comfort. So if a monk is sitting and eating, and at that time his teacher or preceptor comes, what must he do? And he is a one sitting eater. So he should get up and do the duty. And after getting up, he must not eat again. But the elder Tipitaka Chula Abhaya said, he should either keep his seat and finish his meal, or if he gets up, he should leave the rest of his meal in order not to break the ascetic practice. So he could do either of the two. He should ignore his duty to his teachers and go on eating, or he should get up and do duties to the his teachers and what do you call, and forfeit the meal. And this is one whose meal is still unfinished. Therefore, let him do the duties, but in that case, let him not eat eat the rest of the meal. So this is what the elder said.
For how long would one undertake these practices?
As long as one wants to. There is no fixed duration of time.
Is there some usual
And now it's very unusual.
Do these practices?
Right. Monks do not practice this much now. Out of 13, monks practice most is this one eating at one sitting and one bowl eating. We haven't come to one bowl eating. And sometimes staying at a cemetery and sometimes under a tree. But not for long.
You choose one at a time, or two or three, how many practices?
Yeah, you can practice two or three or four. We'll come to that later. Because it is said that if you can get a suitable place, open air place, and then close to a cemetery or any cemetery, then you can practice all 13. At the same time. And the elder Mahakasapa is said to be the one who practiced all 13 practices all through his life. He is the foremost among those who undertake the ascetic practices. So, one who is strict may not take anything more than the food that he has laid his hand on, whether it is little or much. And if people bring him ghee, etc., thinking the elder has eaten nothing, while these are allowable for the purpose of medicine, they are not so for the purpose of food. As medicine, they are allowable, but not as food. The medium one may take more as long as the meal in the bowl is not exhausted. For he is called one who stops when the food is finished. The mild one may eat as long as he does not get up from his seat. He is either one who stops with the water because he eats until he takes water for washing the bowl, or one who stops with the session because he eats until he gets up. So there is a joke among monks that you can sit from the morning until noon and eat as much as you like. If you do not break your position, say it's sitting position, then you can sit from morning till noon. And in the benefit, he has little affliction and little sickness because he eats less. He has lightness, strength, and a happy life. There is no contravening rules about food. That is not what is left over from a meal. I'll talk about it later. Craving for taste is eliminated. His life conforms to the principles of fewness of wishes and so on. So this is one session eater or one sitting eater. The next one is one bowl eating. It's not so easy. You use only one bowl when you eat. So when at the time of drinking rice gruel, the bowl food eater gets curry that is put in a dish, he can first either eat the curry or drink the rice gruel. Not both at the same time. So drink rice gruel and after finishing it, eat rice fish curry. If he puts it in the rice gruel becomes repulsive when a curry made with cured fish, etc., is put into it. In Burma, we have what we call fish paste. It's very smelly. So it is allowable to do this only in order to use it without making it repulsive. Consequently, this is said with reference to such curry as that. But what is unrepulsive, such as honey, sugar, etc., should be put into it. And in taking it, he should take the right amount. It is allowable to take green vegetables with the hand, with one hand, and eat them. But he should not do so, not unless he does. But he should not do so, but should be put into should put the vegetable into the bowl. So unless he does not, is also not correct here. Although he can take the vegetable, put the vegetable in his hand and eat it, it is not proper for him to do so. So he should put it in the bowl. Because a second vessel has been refused, it is not allowable to use anything else. Not even the leaf of a tree. Sometimes people use a leaf of a tree as a bowl or as a receptacle. Even that is not allowed. And there are three grades. For one who is strict, except at the time of eating sugar cane, it is not allowed while eating to throw rubbish away. Maybe some bones or something. Rubbish. And it is not allowed while eating to break up rice lumps, fish, meat, and cakes. The rubbish should be thrown away and the rice lumps, etc., broken up before sitting to eat. The medium one is allowed to break them up with one hand while eating, and he is called hand ascetic. The mild one is called a bowl ascetic. Anything that can be put into his bowl, he is allowed while eating to break up. That is rice lumps, etc., with his hand or with his teeth. The moment any one of these three agrees to a second vessel, his ascetic practice is broken. So he could use only one bowl. Then in our country, after taking meal, we drink water. It is customary. So when we want to drink water, we put the water in the bowl and drink from the bowl. So when I saw Zen people eating in a bowl and then wash the bowl and drink the water, I was reminded of this practice. It may have some connection with this practice. So here the practice is to have only one bowl. You put everything in one bowl and eat from this bowl, including water and other beverages. In the benefits, craving for variety of taste is eliminated. excessiveness of wishes is abandoned, he sees the purpose and the right amount in nutriment. Now, and the right amount should go. What is meant here is, he sees the mere purpose in taking food. Now, Buddha said, you take food, or monks must take food, not to be proud of themselves, not to make merriment, but just enough to keep him alive, so that he could practice Buddha's teachings. So that is the purpose in food. So here also, I think food may be better than nutriment, although it is not wrong. So the purpose of taking food is not to beautify oneself, not to take pride in one's strength, and so on. Here he eats only in one bowl, and so he cannot have that kind of pride and other things. He is not bothered with carrying saucers, etc. about. His life conforms to the principles of fewness of wishes and so on. Now one word is left here untranslated, and that is, he is not distracted while eating, because he used only one bowl. He doesn't have to be looking for other bowls, so he is not distracted. That word is, the translation of that word is missing in the translation. So this is one bowl eater. The next one, it is difficult to understand the next one. Later food refusers practice. Now, when a monk eats, and if he refuses to take some more, then he must not eat other food after changing his posture. Suppose I'm eating sitting, and I'm eating, and somebody comes taking something and say, offer something to me, and I say, no, I don't want that, it's enough. Then if I have done so, I can eat on until I finish my meal. That is while sitting. But if I stand up or if I walk and then want to eat again, then I cannot eat. There is some kind of a act of vinaya to perform in order for me to eat. So that is what is meant here. Later food refuses me. Now, as soon as I sit down, I cannot refuse. I'm not said to be refusing anything. But after eating something, after eating one lump of food, and then I refuse, then I cannot eat other food if I change my position, if I change my posture. Now this monk, who undertakes this ascetic practice, cannot take food after having made it allowable for him. Now, suppose I refuse the offer. Then, if I want to eat after breaking this posture, then I must take that food to another monk and let him eat a little and say, that's enough for me. That means it is left over of him. And then I can eat it. It's something like a punishment. That you refuse and then you want to eat. So you must eat another person's left over. Something like that. So a monk who does not undertake this ascetic practice can eat that way if he wants to eat more. But a monk who undertakes this practice must not eat in any way. he must avoid and picking up the food and going to other monk and have him made it left over. He cannot do that. So that is what is meant in here. The translation is not so convincing here. And the words in the square brackets, I don't know where he got them from. They don't help much in understanding. So there are three grades here. There is no showing that he has it enough with respect to the first lamp, but there is when he refuses more while that is being swallowed. That means in the rule it is said that a monk who refuses while eating, or a monk who refuses after he has started eating. So if he has not eaten at all, there can be no refusal. But he eats one lump and then the next lump he refuses. So there can be refusal only at the second and other lumps. So when one who is strict has just shown that he has had enough, that means he has refused, he does not eat the second lump, and so on. So he must stop there. Only one mouthful, and that finished. The medium one eats also that food with respect to which he has shown that he has it enough. So the medium one could eat, go on eating. But the mild one goes on eating until he gets up from his seat. That means he could eat as much as he like, unless, provided he does not change his posture. So it involves a certain rule, and that rule is that if you have refused to accept something, and then if you want to eat it again, then you must do something. If you change posture. That is why monks do not want to say no when something is offered to them. He may accept it and he may not eat it, but he doesn't want to say no, because that amounts to refusal, and so he could not eat later. And there is something like talking in a roundabout way. And in Burmese, we have a certain expression for that, which goes around that rule. And so when someone offers something to me and I want to say no, I will not say no, but I will say something like, directly translated, I will say, it is complete or something like that. But sometimes lay people don't know the monk's language. So there is often a problem. So I'll say it is complete or something like that. But he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that I refuse to accept. So it is better to accept it and you can leave it. So this is the later food refusers practice. So this practice involves a rule in the Patimokkha. Okay. I think we should stop here. We'll have to take two weeks to finish this chapter.
Are the others from the Pratimoksha too?
Huh?
Are the other practices from the Pratimoksha
too? No, these practices are not from Pratimoksha.
But you said this one was.
But it involves. This one involves Patimokkha rule. Because the Patimokkha rule is that say, I must not eat if I have refused. Now, even though I have refused, if I want to eat later, then I can have it made left over by another monk. But if I keep this practice, then I cannot do that.
So it would seem from this that fasting is not permissible as a practice, or
fasting,
not eating,
or not eating altogether,
just drinking water.
No, that is not
an acceptable
not
aesthetic
promoted.
Practice,
right?
Even for 1 or 2 or 3 days or 7 days.
It's okay to fast if you want to, but not as a practice. Because one has to eat to keep himself alive. So fasting in Buddhism is fasting for half a day. When lay people keep 8 precepts, then they do not eat from noon until the next morning.
Does it happen that you don't get food? Does it happen that you don't get food when you go run for alms?
Whether you go for alms or not, you are not to eat after noon.
No, he's talking. So sometimes when you go out for alms, do you not get food in the morning when you try to
somebody
go
not give it to you?
So sometimes you eat out of because no one gives you food. You don't eat.
Yeah, then you must go without food. You cannot eat afternoon on any account. Sometimes, when traveling, sometimes I had to skip meals. You know, when you board a plane, and they don't serve meal until afternoon.
So probably the answer to that question is, where? In Burma, you will never have that problem, but here you could have.
That's right, because in Burma, you will always get enough to eat. People are very willing. They are glad to be able to give to monks. So it's not a problem in Buddhist countries, but here, in other countries, it's a problem. Yes.
That time, I don't think he was really properly ordained, but he knows the way he can get through initially, so I gave him, but now he never had any problem. But later on, he really got into it and get properly ordained. Very interesting. And another question I think she asked about the robes, they are done commercially, and also I think we have one season or festival where the people stitch those things overnight.
No, actually, what lay people do is to make cloth, not robes. They call that robe material. You know, now is the season for offering katina robes. And katina robe is different from the ordinary robes. And the difference is we must make the robe in one day. So suppose a lay person comes to a monastery and offer not a finished robe, but a cloth to be used as katina robe. If we accept it today, then we must finish it today until it becomes a robe. That is in the olden days, when no ready-made robes are available, or they don't want to offer ready-made robes. So in that case, all the monks in the monastery must work together. There's some boiling a dye, and some stitching, some cutting, and so on. And then everybody must lend a hand. So, following that tradition, and nowadays in Burma, people have a festival weaving cloth, and they transfer the expression unstale to their weaving, and so they try to weave, suppose from say 6 o'clock this evening, before dawn next morning. So they try to weave, and there's a contest. The girls enter this contest, weaving weaving cloth for robes. I don't know how they decide the winner. So actually, the word unstale is used among monks, and that means you must make the robe on the very day you accept the cloth. It must not gone stale and go over to the next day. So in Burmese we call, please excuse me, matodingan, right? So we call unstale robe, and unstale robe means a robe made on the same day. But now people say they are offering unstale robe, but actually what they do is just weave cloth and offer to the monks, and the monks have to do that. But now we are in a better shape because there are ready-made robes, and so we don't have to do anything. But sometimes people wanted monks to do something as they did in the olden days. And when I was living in my country, Sagaing, a certain head of a monastery said, "Why not do something like they did in the olden days?" So he had people brought cloth to the monastery, and then everybody has to work. Oh, it's a great work, because even the smallest of the rope, because you have to dye it two or three times, not one time. And if there were rains, it would be very difficult. But it was lucky, because in Upper Burma, in Sagaing, there was not much rain, so we were able to finish the rope in time. But it's not really dry, but a little damp, but it could be used as a rope. That is why there are no commercial ropes, and so monks do not know how to make ropes now. So the size, the dimension of the parts, and then how to stitch them, monks don't know now. Most monks don't know. And when I came to this country first, people asked me to order ropes from Burma. I said, "Why not make ropes here?" So I gave them a dimension of the rope, and they made it here.
The ropes are rectangular. Is that it?
Yeah.
Just what you showed us.
Yes. Actually, they represent, according to our books, they represent the pattern of the fields. Once Buddha was traveling, and he was up a mountain, and he looked down and he saw the fields. You know, the fields are small fields in India, not like fields in the United States. Here they use machines, and so fields are maybe 2-3 miles long. There a field may be about 10-20 yards wide, and so on. So Buddha saw these, what do you call those, boundaries of the fields, kasin. What do you call those?
Rows, beds.
Huh?
Beds, rows.
No, the edges. Yeah. So Buddha saw this, and Buddha told Ananda, Ananda, could you make a robe like this? Ananda said, yes. And so Ananda made the robe, which looks like the field, the pattern of the field. So it came to me. And so this, we usually have five sections for this robe. I cannot see these pages, right? The sections.
No, this piece will close again.
Yeah. This is one section. And here are stitches. Mm-hmm. And this the second section. The third section is actually wider than the other two. So there are five sections.
But this strips?
Yeah. And then there is this small room here. So two rooms in one section.
It's about an inch.
And they must be, these stitches must be cut actually. Cut and then stitched together again. But nowadays they just make a, what do you call this? They do not cut.
Just fold.
They just fold it in. Stitch.
Isn't the idea behind this that you're getting these cloth from wherever
that's
you
right.
get?
That's yeah.
right.
So you may not get the right size. You have to pick up small pieces of cloth and then make them into a robe.
But everybody followed the same pattern?
Oh, yes. Yes. And this has more sections. The number of sections is odd. 7, 9, 13, 15.
It's like no case. This is kind of a miniature.
That's
little,
right.
Miniature.
Yes,
of
miniature
that.
Of this.
Yeah.
The stitches are.
Yeah, patterns and
yeah, patterns
strips
are
of
same. Yeah,
stitches.
But we have border.
Yeah,
do you have border?
Yes.
There's a border there.
Yeah, this is a border.
And they even have the...
Big. Oh, and
the,
corners,
and
too.
Corners, like we have corners. Same corner.
And this is used... We put some buttons here. And when I wear this way... Actually, they must be... tied together, or there must be a button and put in here. Or I can just tie them together. So when I walk, the lower garment won't show. But here I don't do this because sometimes it got caught in some the door of the car or something. Uh-huh.
Okay.